Welcome back to another episode of Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest today is Jamel Bowie. Jamel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me here.
It's my pleasure. So why don't you tell the lovely folks a little bit about yourself?
Sure thing. I am a staff writer at Slate Magazine. I cover politics and other things. And I'm also a very big Star Trek fan and have been since I was a little kid, actually. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your Star Trek fandom. What is your favorite Star Trek series?
So I think this is one of those situations where I have no real critical distance. and so my favorite Star Trek series is The Next Generation, because that is the one we watched when I was a kid as a family. It was sort of like it was every evening it was on, we would gather in the living room and watch an episode of Deep Space, not Deep Space Nine, but Next Generation. And so that went on for pretty much as long as that show was on. And so it is my favorite. It has a very special place in my heart, even though I can see that the beginning of that series is really not very good. and there are a lot of ways in which it is very flawed.
That is, I mean, my answer is very similar to yours. The Next Generation is always going to be kind of my Star Trek, because that's the first Star Trek that was new and I watched as it came out as a kid. So it has a special place in my heart. So probably my favorite series. But if you were to ask me what I think the best series of Star Trek is, I probably would not pick The Next Generation. And in fact, I would pick Deep Space Nine.
Right. I think that's sort of inarguable. Like, Deep Space Nine is the best written, best directed series of Star Trek.
And it is has the most interesting characters, I think. Let me ask you, as you're a Star Trek fan, what are your feelings about Voyager?
So I can enjoy Voyager. Like, I feel like there's sort of like people who dislike Voyager a lot. Really dislike it in a way that's not dissimilar to, I think, the way people dislike the later prequel movies. Like, it's obviously not like the worst thing in the world, but it's just it feels like such a drop off in quality from the original series and TNG and Deep Space Nine that people just don't like it. I kind of see Voyager as being more akin to your Returns of the Jedi's. Right, it's not as good. But still enjoyable, and I see what they were trying to do, right? They're trying to reintroduce the feeling of exploration and adventure that you had sort of lost with Deep Space Nine, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and I can live with that.
Sure, and we can all agree that the worst series is Enterprise. So
absolutely,
that saved Voyager from the bottom of the list. Oh, Enterprise. I was so excited when Enterprise came out, because it was like, ooh, new Star Trek. And I like Scott Bakula. And then it all just went horribly wrong.
who doesn't like Scott Bakula? I think that was... I remember being like, oh, it's a Quantum Leap guy. I should enjoy this. This shouldn't be too bad.
Mm-hmm. And nope. It was, and you didn't. Although it has its moments, but overall, not so good. But luckily for us... The random episode Atron 4000 did not pick an Enterprise or a Voyager episode. In fact, it picked a Deep Space Nine episode. On the con side, it picked a first season Deep Space Nine episode, when the first couple of seasons of any series tends not to, they're still figuring out stuff. The cast hasn't gelled. Perhaps the concept isn't fully formed. So we've got a first season episode number 5, according to Memory Alpha, and it's called Babel. And so this is a goatee-less Captain Sisko, and he still has his hair. So that's when you can tell it's an early Deep Space Nine. and possibly, maybe not great. this episode has its moments, but not probably the best showing of Deep Space Nine that there is. But there's some good things in it. So why don't we just jump right into what's going on in this episode. It starts off with kind of an amusing... I mean, I like Chief O'Brien. He's a good character. And this episode starts off with, he's kind of not having a great day is what I wrote down. Everything is going wrong on Deep Space Nine. And this is like the first season or so, they really played up the fact that, you know, the Federation had kind of inherited this old, aging Cardassian space station, and nothing was really right, and it was very different, a different feel than other Star Trek series where, you know, they're on this gleaming, clean starship and everything's working. Even when stuff blows up, they can figure it out, and it's all pretty much working exactly as it should. Deep Space Nine, in this episode especially, nothing is working the way it should. Chief O'Brien is running all over the place, trying to fix docking pylons, and someone's stuck in an airlock, and
he seems to be the only engineer on the station.
That's right. Or the only competent one, at the least.
Right.
Because everyone is like, Chief O'Brien, you need to fix my replicators. Chief O'Brien, you need I've been waiting for your crew to fix my starship. This alien captain, freighter captain, is very unhappy with O'Brien, and he accosts them. And O'Brien's like, well, we're behind. What can I do? I can't do anything. And then he gets a call from Dax, and apparently there's something wrong in her lab, so he runs to her lab, and there's a high-pitched sound, so he fixes that. And then Kira is having trouble with her terminal, so he runs to Ops to fix that. And then while he's there, Commander Sisko orders up a cup of coffee, and the replicator's awful. So he's like, O'Brien, fix the replicator! And this is a nice little moment when O'Brien is like, oh, sure, don't let me have a moment's rest. I'm just sitting here doing nothing. I'll guess I'll fix the replicator. And so he goes off, fixes the replicator. And he dials up a cup of coffee for himself. He drinks it, and he closes up a little panel. And then the camera pans into the replicator and focuses on something that's beeping or blinking, I should say, and as an audience member, you think, this is probably important, but I don't know what it is. And that's the opening of the episode. And so then it's not a super exciting opener, but it is a nice way to characterize O'Brien, and really brings out Deep Space Nine, I think, as a character on the show. And then we go to Quark's. And Quark is one of my favorite characters because he's a lovable rogue. Oh, that lovable rogue Quark. And even this early in Deep Space Nine, Quark is pretty much fully Quark.
Right. No, he's a fully formed, you know, scoundrel, mm-hmm. untrustworthy, money-grabbing. I'll say I have a good friend who's also a big Star Trek fan, and he likes all the series, but he does feel that the Ferengi are like, you know, vaguely anti-Semitic.
Oh, well, I guess he does have a point there. I had never actually thought about that.
He's sort of like, yeah, they just sort of like have all the stereotypes of, all the behavioral stereotypes of like European Jews from the 1930s. So.
Yeah, that is a good point. And the Ferengi started off in, like, in Next Generation, they were, like, savages, and then all of a sudden they turned into, like, these super greedy, very competent trader race. Ferengi are an odd race in general. Although Quark is a great character.
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic character.
But he is, yeah. So he's not happy because Quark's is empty, nobody is there, except for one guy who's eating some stew or soup or something. And Odo is kind of happy to see that Quark's is empty because he hopes that that means Quark will be leaving Deep Space Nine soon, and Odo's job will be much easier. And the alien who's eating his stew is unhappy and basically forces some of it down Quark's throat, and Odo stops him. And this is when we find out that Quark's replicators are not working, and that's why nobody is in his restaurant, because his replicators aren't working. Which led me to wonder, why would you go to a restaurant and pay for replicated food?
I had that same thought. I mean, if it's a replicator, I mean, like, unless it's sort of like some people's replicators are better tuned, or like you can sort of,
you have special recipes.
Yeah, but it seems like if a replicator, I mean, as far as I understand, a replicator, all it's doing is rearranging matter into food. And so conceivably, you could tell a replicator to make anything.
And it would just make it perfectly,
right,
I imagine.
Right.
When it's working. Yeah, I thought it was very strange. And plus, of course, you know, Deep Space Nine, not Deep Space Nine, but the Starfleet is a cashless society, so it's always very strange when you see people paying for things in Star Trek, especially replicated drinks and food. I always thought that, you know, the part you go to Quark's because he hand makes the drinks at the very least. But in this episode, we find out he replicates them as well.
Well, maybe it's like the cashless society is sort of like the Federation proper, but like at this point, you're sort of like on the in the hinterlands,
on the edges.
So then you got to use money.
You got to use your gold press latinum. I guess so. But the point of this is that his replicators are broken. Nobody's coming to Quark's, and so Quark Odo. Kind of smugly says, oh, well, Chief O'Brien fixed the replicators on the command deck, maybe, but he's very busy, so he'll probably not be able to fix yours. And so he leaves. And then we get a scene where Quark thinks about this for a second, and then he basically hacks his way into the system so he can figure out which replicators are working, and one is led to believe that he will then use those replicators himself to replicate his food and beverages for Quark's. So he can be back in business. And then that takes us to another weird scene in which Dax and Kira are walking along the promenade. And they get kind of, you know, I wouldn't say catcalled, but they get some attention from people walking on the promenade, which I guess they're still trying to show people in the fifth episode that, you know, Dax wasn't always a woman and she has this symbiote in her. And so she's getting used to being Jadzia. So I guess that's why this kind of strange little scene happens. And they walk past Quark's, and just moments before, Quark's was empty, but now he's playing host to a raucous party because his replicators have been fixed. But we know that they haven't been fixed. He's just secretly using ops replicators.
It's maybe it's just because like where my headspace is during the day, but sort of I saw the scene and I thought like I'm not sure that a woman would be like, oh, look at all these men fawning over me.
It was a weird scene.
Right. I mean, it was like totally written by a guy.
Yes. I think we could be sure of that.
Though I will say, you know, I had not watched an episode of Deep Space Nine in a while, and I had forgotten my big crush on Major Kira. It was like, oh yeah, Major Kira is on this series, and she is great.
She is.
She's like my favorite character in the series.
She's a really good character, and she. Once again, this is a very early episode, but her character, as we get to later in the plot, is very kind of cemented in. She does Major Kira things in this episode.
Right.
That's why I love Major Kira, because she does what she needs to get done. We'll get to that, though. So we go back to the ops, and O'Brien is, you know, wiping his brow because he's been working so hard. And Sisko says, hey, O'Brien, thanks for fixing the replicator. Oh, by the way, Jake says that Keiko's a great teacher. O'Brien's like, oh, thanks, that's great. And then he starts speaking in gibberish, and everyone's like, oh no, what's happening? Kira is like, O'Brien, don't go anywhere. And O'Brien, speaking gibberish, just leaves. And nobody runs after him. Which I thought was kind of weird. They're just like, all right, he'll be fine. I'm sure he does this sometimes. He just speaks in gibberish. It'll be all right. But apparently they catch up with him because the next scene, he's in sickbay with Dr. Bashir. And Dr. Bashir is running some scans. And everything seems okay. But clearly something is wrong with O'Brien. He has aphasia and we don't know why. So how do you feel since Dr. Bashir has now been introduced? How do you feel about Dr. Bashir as a character?
I don't really have much of a thought about him, honestly. And I never have. He's been sort of just kind of a bland, you know, British, vaguely, you know, I guess he's supposed to be Arab, but he sort of comes across sort of vaguely ethnic.
That's right. He is vaguely ethnic. Personally, I've never really liked Dr. Bashir. As the series goes on, I like him less and less. So, But he serves his purpose. He's smart and kind of a fish out of water and annoying, I think is how you would describe Dr. Bashir.
It's just it's sort of like relative to the other, you know, doctors in on the various Star Trek series. It's just very underwhelming.
He doesn't even have as much personality as the holographic doctor on Voyager.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, the holographic doctor on Voyager, also annoying, but at least sort of like, yeah, kind of colorful. Mm-hmm. Beverly Crusher is great.
Yep.
Obviously, Bones is sort of like...
He's the gold standard.
Right, he's like top-tier character in general. But Bashir's kind of like a glass of warm milk.
That's right. He's there. He's not offensive, generally. He is mildly annoying. And he can't figure out what's wrong with O'Brien. and so they decide that all the senior officers, well, they don't decide, but all the senior officers are sitting around a little table in ops. I've never seen them sit around that table before, and it looked very weird, so that's probably why they never did it again. Because they all kind of look like toddlers sitting around this tiny table, talking about what's going to happen with O'Brien. Everybody's very concerned, because who doesn't like Chief O'Brien? And Lieutenant Dax suddenly has aphasia. She is speaking gibberish, and something is not right, they decide right now. And so Sisko quarantines Deep Space Nine, and they set up a little hospital to deal with all of these people who have been stricken with aphasia. Then we switch to our, I guess this is a B or C plot, with Odo and Quark, and Odo sees that Quark's business is booming, and he is very suspicious, and he says, "Hey, Quark, what's happening?" And Quark says, "Oh, Rom fixed the replicators," and so everybody's happy. And Odo's like, "Well, you know, the station's on lockdown, so you should be closed anyway." And Quark is like, "Well, non-essential things are closed. My bar is very essential, so we're open." which I thought was funny. So Odo, of course, does not think this is true. And he decides that he's going to be a cart, I guess, and wait and see where Quark is getting all of his food from. And so we find out Quark goes, takes his little cart to one of the crew members' empty quarters, starts the replicator, replicates something, and in the background we see Odo, the cart, transform into Odo, because I think the people at Deep Space Nine were very proud of their shape-shifting special effect, although it has not aged particularly well, but at the time it was pretty cool. And Odo finds out, "Oh, Quark, you're doing exactly what I thought you were." And in one of my favorite lines of the episode, Quark is like, "Well, how did you know?" And he said, "Well, when you told me Rom fixed your replicator, I knew something was wrong because Rom's an idiot." I just laughed and laughed. And of course, Quark agreed with him. He said, "Yeah, Rom is an idiot." And then there's another weird scene where Sisko runs into Jake on the promenade for no particular reason. But I guess just to remind people that Sisko has a son, and he is Jake for later when something else happens. And while Sisko is talking to Jake, the impatient alien freighter captain comes up and says, "I really have to go because I've got some stuff that's going to ruin on my ship." And Sisko is like, "Sorry, it's under quarantine. You're not leaving." Alien, not very happy about that.
This is that's like a it's like a weird little plot in the episode, because it kind of just goes away for most of it. Like, it pops up and then they kind of just disregard it, and then in the last 10 minutes it's like, "Oh yeah, we have to resolve this."
That's right. And then it becomes very important for no particular reason. And so they are all across the station. People are getting affected with this aphasia thing, and nobody knows what's going on. And then they finally figure out, it's probably spreading through the replicators. And they say, "Well, at least that will be contained to just the command level." And then Quark comes in fortuitously and says, "Well, actually, Quark has been stealing replicator food from the replicator here, so it's all across the station." And then Julian Bashir says, "Oh, it's also airborne now," FYI. So even if it wasn't, you know, throughout the whole station before, now it is. Which led me to think that I think Deep Space Nine should have sensors that would detect this automatically. Some weird airborne virus floating around. I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting too much from Deep Space Nine.
I mean, it seems, you know, if this was a subject to Bajoran attacks, it seems that the Cardassians would have thought about it at least.
You would think they would have some precautions for biological terror weapons, but apparently not so much. So Captain Sisko, or Commander Sisko, he's not a captain yet, says, hey, let's everybody search the replicators and let's figure out what's going on. He doesn't actually say hey, but he says it in a much more commanding way than I did.
He seems, it's been so long since I've watched like a season one episode that he seems to still be like overacting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed that, sort of like stage acting almost.
Yes, he is overfilling the room.
Right. Whereas, like, everyone else seems to have, like, a sense that, you know, like, they're on TV, and so there's, like, you know, you can dial it down a little bit, but he's, like, you know, almost chewing scenery.
He is close to chewing the scenery. But he's very, very concerned about this whole thing, so maybe that's why. And so, for some reason, Kira is in the replicator looking around, and she finds the device. She immediately assumes it's a Cardassian device because of its design and power cell. But everyone's like, that doesn't really make sense. Why would the Cardassians sabotage their own space station? And Julian determines that it's actually a Bajoran virus. And they figure out that it must have been placed there when Deep Space Nine was being constructed by Bajoran rebels. And this is the moment where Captain Commander Sisko gets a call that says, you better come to sickbay, which is one of the annoying things about Star Trek, where people just get vague calls. I'm not going to tell you what's happening. Just come to where I am. And so he goes. And oh no, Jake has the aphasia thing. And this is where we find out that, although I think the actor who played Jake gets much better as time goes on, he's not really great in this episode. No. But he's very young, so I wouldn't be very good either. So, but Jake, not a convincing aphasia patient, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure. I mean, I cut a lot of breaks of child actors because, like, there aren't very many good ones, and the ones, like, half the ones that are good just seem kind of creepy. Dakota Fanning when she was a kid, it just seemed kind of weird.
She was too good.
Right, she was too good. So it just was like, please be worse.
Stop creeping me out, Dakota Fanning. So Jake, yes, he is not creepy. He's just, you know, like, oh, he's a kid who's acting. So you cut him a break, like you said. But he does get much better. So if you're listening, and you're probably not, you got much better. So don't worry. And I'm sure you're very worried about my opinion of your acting skills from like 20 years ago. But anyway, so Kira's like, okay, it's a Bajoran virus, so I will use my contacts, the Bajoran resistance, to figure out who would have been capable of doing this. So she calls up her friend in the Bajoran resistance, and she's very lucky because she called up this friend, and this friend immediately can figure out who it is, and she gives him some name. And she's like, great, thanks, friend. And she looks up this guy's name, and sadly, he's dead. Which seems like it would be a problem, but Kira is not daunted. She's undaunted, and so she figures out who was there and signed the death certificate, I guess. And it turns out that's some other doctor, so she takes his name and starts looking for him, and she's having not much success. But she, not immediately, but eventually finds out where this guy is, so she calls him up. And he immediately takes her call, which I thought was interesting. And she's like, hey. And he's like, oh, what can I do for you? And she says, do you know anything about an aphasia virus that was planted on Deep Space Nine by any chance? And he says, absolutely not, and hangs up immediately.
She's very forward about that question. Like, there's no trying to soften him up or anything. Just like, hey, by the way. Or not even by the way. Hey. Virus. Are you a terrorist? You're like, help me out if you are.
Yes, please help me, terrorist. I suspect that you unleashed a biological terrorist weapon on Deep Space Nine. Could you help me? Yeah, you would think she'd be like, hey, how are you? My friend was in the Resistance and I was in the Resistance, so I thought we'd connect and maybe, oh, by the way, we've got a situation here. But no, she's like, hey, Virus Man, come help us. And he hangs up, which she takes to mean that he does, in fact, know about the virus, which is as good a chance as any. And this is when we find out that O'Brien has taken a turn for the worse, and it looks like he's going to die. So now they really need a cure for this, and Dr. Bashir is working as hard as he can. But as he's working on his cure, he comes down with the aphasia virus, so he can no longer work on it. And so now Kira knows that she really has to go. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go get this doctor guy. And Captain Sisko, Commander Sisko, is, I'll just call him Sisko.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
He says, well, you know, Deep Space Nine's under quarantine. I can't let you leave Deep Space Nine. And she says, I have no intention of setting foot on Bajor. And he still is not convinced until Odo says, she's the only chance we have. And Sisko's like, well, all right, go ahead, Kira. And off she goes. And so she goes to, as that's happening, Sisko has basically drafted Odo to help him on ops because everybody else has got the aphasia virus, apparently. And so Odo's trying to help him out.
Can I just say real quick how that aphasia virus is really horrible? I mean, at first it's sort of just like funny, right? Like, oh, people can't use the right words. And then it's like, oh, and then it'll kill you. Then you'll die of a horrible fever.
Yes, it quickly escalates from, gibberish to, by the way, you're going to die. And not much time as well. I mean, they don't really say how long passes, but it doesn't seem like from when O'Brien gets it, because he's the, you know, like kind of patient zero, till when everybody else is getting it. It really escalates very quickly. And spreads through the whole station very quickly as well. So it is kind of a terrifying virus. Luckily, easily spotted, though, if you have it, though, because if you're speaking gibberish, chances are, unless you, like, got hit in the head or something and have aphasia that way, you got the virus. which is, I guess, a good thing. what is happening? Okay, so she goes off. Kira goes off and takes a runabout and flies over and scans the doctor's office, and there's only one person in the office, so she calls down, and the doctor's like, you again? Didn't I tell you that I'm not going to help you? I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, oh, I didn't call to ask for your help. I just wanted to see if you were there. And then she beams him up, which I thought was kind of cool. And then he's like, what are you? This is ridiculous. I can't help you. I don't know what to do. And this is kidnapping, and I'll have you in prison. And she says, well, guess what? I have the virus, and now it's airborne. So you're not only going to help me, you're helping yourself because, hey, you have the virus now too. And he is not very happy about that. But it is an effective strategy.
Yes.
Because now he has a lot of reason to figure out how to cure this thing. So he admits, yes, I helped him. Let's go to Deep Space Nine, and I'll see what I can do. Although he was far more brilliant than I, so there's probably no chance I can help you, but we'll try it out, because what else can we do? And so they go back. But back on Deep Space Nine, we've got our weird subplot about the impatient freighter captain, and so now he's super impatient, and he is on his ship that is docked to Deep Space Nine, and he's like, okay, I'm leaving. And he fires up his engines and is going to rip either his ship apart or Deep Space Nine in to get out. And so Sisko's like, you really should not do that. And the freighter captain's like, well, I think I want to. And he apparently collapses at some point or something. I don't know
what happens. Yeah, I guess the virus progresses so quickly and then he collapses and everything goes to hell.
That's right. His ship gets on fire inside. They can't shut down the engines. There's so much pressure that they can't undock the mooring clamps. So the ship is still attached to Deep Space Nine. And so they're like, okay, well, situation is dire. But there are two of us. So we can just go down there and manually, release the clamps. And Sisko can stay here and direct stuff. And this is the moment, of course, that Sisko gets the virus and he can't do anything. So Odo sends out a plaintive call over the station and says, hey, if anyone can come to Ops and help me, we need some help. And Quark appears and says, oh, you said you needed some help. I'm here. And Odo says, you're going to volunteer to help? And in another good interaction, Quark is like, who said anything about volunteering? We'll talk about my fee afterwards. And Odo is like, okay, well, I need to get to the, you know, whatever, docking ring 5 or wherever he has to go. And Quark says, okay, I'll beam you over there. And Odo goes to the transporter bay pod, and Quark says, I must have seen this procedure hundreds of times when I was on a freighters. Don't worry. And Odo is a little worried, but he is. Quark beams him correctly to the place that he needs to be. And a long story short, which I guess is too late now, really, Odo manages to manually unmoor the ship, I guess, which requires throwing like 3 levers, closing an airlock, and slapping a button. And then the ship flies off into space and blows up. And I thought to myself, did they just let that captain blow up on his ship? But then they show that Odo, I guess, had gone in there first and dragged the captain out. So he's not dead. But his ship is destroyed, as is his cargo. So he's probably not very happy about that. And then we find out that the Bajoran dude that Kira kidnapped is like, well, take me to you where your doctor was. And it turns out that Bashir was well on his way to getting a cure. And so the Bajoran guy just kind of, you know, takes 2 seconds and says, okay, there's your cure. And everybody gets the antidote and everybody feels better.
Yeah, no, it's a happy ending. There's no mass death. There's that scene earlier when they're like, yeah, hopefully Kira comes back to a station with people in it, which was like unexpectedly dark.
That's true. Yes, they do mention that. You're like, everyone might be dead by the time she gets back, so she better hurry up. And it ends on a joke because Sisko goes to get a cup of coffee. He drinks it and he says, "O'Brien," because apparently the replicators are not working once again. So that is Babel, Deep Space Nine, Episode 5, Season 1. What did you think of this episode?
You know, for a Season 1 episode, it's not too bad. It's kind of lighthearted. It's
as lighthearted as mass death can be.
But it kind of sort of opens on a joke, ends on a joke. Mm-hmm. It's very much sort of like, or at least begins like a character, a focus on O'Brien as a character. It's like an O'Brien Kira episode, so you can kind of get a feel for who they are. There's like, I said this before, the whole plot with the freighter captain is weird. I don't really understand why it's there. I feel like you could have just taken that out and had a whole episode about just the disease on the ship, mm-hmm. Or on the station. But I know it wasn't, maybe like my bar is so low, but I thought it was like a perfect
for first season.
It was a perfectly fine episode. It's way better than like most first season TNG episodes, which are just like,
well, that's true.
Which are just bad.
This is watchable. And it has some good, I really like, I mean, I said this before, but it is so interesting to me that so many of the characters are kind of fully formed this early, and many of their relationships, like Quark and Odo's relationship, which is one of the highlights, I think, of Deep Space Nine. You see it here, and it's pretty much the way it always was. They have great chemistry. They're playing off each other. Odo doesn't really like Quark, as he shouldn't. Quark enjoys doing bad things to annoy Odo.
Right.
And that's how their relationship is. But yet, when the chips are down and the latinum is on the table, Quark will come through begrudgingly. Mostly because I imagine he knows he'll get more profits if the station's not full of corpses.
And I mean, there are little things there in the episode that sort of like hint or sort of highlight the broader themes of the series. I mean, the fact that the action of this episode is driven by the fact that they're dealing with the residue of the conflict, mm-hmm. and sort of like the consequences of you know, terrorism, sort of points you to where the show is going to go. I mean, obviously, what now, knowing what the show ended up, like, we can see that. But I think even at the time, you may have gotten a sense that this is, you know, these are themes we'll be returning to later.
Right. And they were, Deep Space Nine was on at the same time Next Generation was on for a little while. And they are very different shows. So I think they were trying in the beginning to really bring that home and let viewers know, yes, this is a Star Trek show, but this is unlike any Star Trek you've seen before.
Right.
And it's darker, and we're gonna get into politics and terrorism, and, you know, everyone could die. It could happen.
It's interesting to me, just sort of like the pullback from the plot a bit. It's interesting that, I guess, the net Paramount would have decided that the television was ripe for two Star Trek series at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That this was like a viable business proposition.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. I guess The Next Generation was a phenomenon.
Right. No, it was huge.
And so I think they obviously. I don't think Deep Space Nine was as popular as The Next Generation, because how could it possibly have been? But it was on for 7 seasons, so they made their money off of it, and it was in syndication, so they could make even more money off of it, right? So,
and I mean, in some sense, the momentum from The Next Generation kind of is what got you Voyager, right? Like, I feel like Voyager, in a lot of ways, was modeled as sort of another Next Generation.
Right. It's kind of like Next Gen Light.
Right.
But they kind of, one of the problems, I was talking to Jason Snell about Voyager the other day, and he said that he, and I agree with him, that he felt like they were just, like, the a lot of the writers for Voyager were writers from The Next Generation, and they were telling the same kind of stories because it wasn't, like, Deep Space Nine, it was very different, so they could tell different stories. There wasn't even a ship for the first couple of seasons in Deep Space Nine.
Right.
But Voyager, you know, you could just kind of feel they were just tired. And they were trying to come up with these stories, and they just couldn't come up with anything great. Not to say that it's all bad in Voyager, because it's not.
It's not, and it's sort of a shame, because I think it's like Deep Space Nine really changes, you know, midway through, and you sort of see the show move towards these kind of sustained story arcs over the course of a whole season, or over the course of multiple seasons. And I think Voyager, like, if Voyager had been done in the middle of the last decade, I think it could have been much better, even with all the same ingredients. Just like, it was operating in a culture of television that just wasn't. It was sort of, we were like about to move on to like this the period of serialized television. And I think Voyager may have worked well in that.
Yeah, they were. It was on the cusp of that, but not quite there. And I think Voyager, they made a mistake in the tone of Voyager, because I think they could have skewed it dark, much like Deep Space Nine. It was kind of dark because, you know, they're stranded. Stuff should have been breaking down, and they could have had a lot of interesting. And of course, they mine that a little bit, but they always kind of reset back to kind of the perfect Voyager and environment where everything was working. And sure, it's still going to take a long time, but at least everything is still working. Whereas they could have, I think, mined two things. I think they overlooked, but they just kind of didn't really address that well. The integration of the Maquis with the Voyager crew, that happens like in the first episode, and then really doesn't ever come up again. Everybody's happy and working together, and everything pretty much works all the time. So I feel like those are missed opportunities in Voyager, and if they had mined those a little bit more, it would have been a more interesting series.
It's funny, what the series that Voyager could have ended up being is like Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, exactly. They needed Ronald Moore, who was responsible for Deep Space Nine on Voyager, right, to make it. And they could have been Battlestar Galactica, but it wasn't. It was Next Generation Light, sadly. But I've had many people on this very podcast who pick Voyager as their favorite Star Trek. So
interesting.
There's a Star Trek for everybody. I don't know if Enterprise is anybody's favorite Star Trek, but I bet somewhere out there somebody really loves Enterprise.
You know what's crazy? So Enterprise, I remember reading somewhere, Enterprise was, you know, when it went off the air, was probably pulling a couple million viewers every episode, which at the time was just abysmal. But if you today, a TV show that pulled like 3 or 4 million people an episode would be a huge hit.
It was before its time. They should have waited. And I will say Enterprise, fourth season Enterprise, was a pretty darn good Star Trek show. But sadly, the writing was on the wall, and so it was not meant to be. But if the fourth season of Enterprise was the first season of Enterprise, I think it would still, well, maybe not still be on the air, but it would have had more seasons.
Yeah.
But that's not the way of the world. No one listens to me.
I'm kind of surprised that we haven't seen a new Star Trek series. I would have figured that the J.J. Abrams reboot would have just kickstarted Star Trek again, and it seems like that there's an open space for a science fiction television show, or a very good one.
Well, there was that brief flare up of internet rumors that Netflix was going to have a Star Trek series, but that turned out to be not true. But I think that given the reaction of that rumor, people were like, "Oh my god, this will be awesome." Maybe that will make Paramount think, maybe we should, or CBS, or whoever owns Star Trek now, I don't even know, investigate. Maybe even I heard someone started a rumor that after the next Star Trek movie, they're going to have a Star Trek series set in the J.J. Abrams universe. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems plausible to me. So maybe that's what we'll get. Maybe we'll get J.J. Abrams' take on Deep Space Nine.
That could be interesting.
That would be interesting. There'd be a lot more lens flare, I'll tell you that much. Well, thank you so much for joining me and discussing this Deep Space Nine episode. I don't have an ending, so...
Okay, well, thank you for having me on. This was good fun.
It was a pleasure, and hopefully you will come back on at some point if I have not scarred you with this experience.
Not at all.
Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation's Who Watches the Watchers?